Welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 116. This is a show about Linux. We bring a variety of topics through hardware, software, experiences, or whatever we just want to bring to the show for the listeners, and we thank you for listening. I am Cody Cooper, only part of the equation that equals this show. However, the other part, the Linux maven, Stephen McLaughlin, aka Door-to-Door Geek, is sitting out tonight hosting Podnuts Daily. For those of you who don't know, that show is back. Doe is taking over the reins to hosting that show. If you have listened to it in the past and have been itching for some new episodes, definitely check it out. If you've never listened to it, check it out as well. Someone that recently appeared on that show and then is sitting in for Door tonight is a good friend of mine, Tracy Holtz, aka the High Tech Redneck. Tracy, how's it going tonight?
I am doing way better than I deserve. How about you?
I'm doing really good, and I knew exactly what you were going to say to that, because I listen to every single episode of a show that Tracy is on called The Techie Geek. And for those of you who haven't listened to it, Tracy, would you mind giving us a quick rundown of what happens on that show?
Sure, yeah. Now, The Techie Geek is 100% full credit. Everything of that goes to Russ, a friend of mine, Russ. He does all the legwork. Basically, it's a place for us to get down, talk geeky stuff, links. It doesn't have to be tech stuff, kind of anything cool that we might think everybody would like to know, find out what it's about. And another nice thing I really like about it is every now and then it lets us get on a soapbox and rant and rave a little bit about stuff we don't like. So if you listen to that, you'll know what I mean by that. We don't get too bad about that, but yeah, it's just one of those really, really fun podcasts and times I really like doing. But Russ does get the full credit for it. He started it, and I came in around episode 70 or 80 or something like that. I filled in for him one time because we were friends, and then he said, just come on. So after that, we've been kind of tag teaming it. And we did come back a little bit. We had a little break. We weren't pod fading. We weren't doing anything. We just had some major issues. Russ started a new job. I had an employee quit, so I was trying to hire and get somebody in. I lost internet for a week. I was out for a week. And then he lost power because of the hurricane. So there was just a time we just couldn't get together and record. We're not pod fading. We're not going away. But it's sometimes this is hard for us to get together.
But they are back. Definitely check out The Techie Geek, and it is a great show. We're going to go ahead and jump into our show now. And Tracy, thank you very much for being here. I realize you are busy and you are filling up a huge gap, and we're going to try our best. I'm sure you're, I mean, I wouldn't have asked you if I didn't trust you. So
yeah, you guys got to put up with me, and sorry about all the mistakes now. Just saying it now.
That's okay. Yes, we are not 100% experts. All right. First off, the basic. Support those who support you. If you guys are shopping on Amazon this year, don't even think of Amazon. Think of podnuts.com/Amazon. If you use that URL, or if you make a web link and post it on your browser, and if you use that, Podnuts gets a small commission for every sale that you for everything that you purchase through Amazon using that link. It's super easy. It helps us out. It doesn't cost you a cent more, and we'd really appreciate it if you'd use that link. Thank you very much. Heading into big news this week, I think the biggest, and this was announced today, the Linux kernel 3.7 was released today. Did you read about that, Tracy?
Very little. I actually installed, was it 3.7 stable or testing came out? Do you know which one it was?
It was just 3 or 4 days ago. It was 3.7.8 RC, the release candidate.
Okay, yeah, the release candidate. Yeah, I haven't tried that. I installed the new stable 3.6, I forgot, 6070, whatever they're on now.
Okay, so you're not on the bleeding edge. You're just trying to maybe go a release behind just for the stability?
Yeah, I usually the only time I upgrade the kernel is basically if some hardware's not working right, then I'll try the new kernel. Other than that, I am kind of a long-term release type person. But I will upgrade my kernels along the way.
Okay, I've never actually upgraded a kernel by itself, so I'm very interested in that. And to see this, some of the bigger things that were announced with the release of 3.7 was this release adds support for the new ARM 64-bit architecture, ARM multi-platform, the ability to boot into different ARM systems using a single kernel, support for cryptographically signed kernel modules, ButterFS support for disabling copy-on-write on a per-file basis using Chatter, Faster Butter, F-Sync. I mean, just a whole slew of, a whole slew of new additions with this kernel. And what, one of the things that really kind of hit me right off the bat that I was looking at here, the ARM 64-bit architecture. If we're optimizing the kernel for better use with ARM processors, I think that's fantastic, because something I've been speaking about the last few weeks is what I want to do eventually is to kind of move my studio, some of my lighter machines, to ARM-based machines so that it consumes less power. I don't need big powerhouses. Honestly, we use technology. I mean, way overpowered machines for what we generally need. So I'm trying to scale it down a bit. Do you utilize any ARM-based processors in any of your rigs at home or at work, Tracy?
No, the only thing ARM I really have would be inside routers and stuff, and that's what I would like it for. I would like to get a little micro ITX or ATX box, just a tiny one with the ARM, and that can kind of be a router, a gateway, a server, and everything for me. Just because right now I'm using, I got just a older machine server that I got that's a 1U server rack that I have, and it does the job, but I wouldn't mind getting, cause that's only using about, when I tested it, about 120 watts, which isn't too much, but if I can get that down to 15 to 30, that's even better.
Yeah, I mean, for one machine to decrease it by 75%, that's great. But if you're talking using multiple machines, I mean, that's quite a significant cost savings. And then you're talking about just using up less energy, period. So that's just good for, it's a win-win. There's no loss there.
Yeah, but for me, I think the big thing about the release was ButterFS. That what intrigues me the most. I think what you'll see ButterFS come in more stream on mainstream stuff, to your Ubuntu's and stuff like that, that really don't embraced it too much. They did a little, SUS really embraced it really early on. So I got a couple of the open SUS and I got a couple ButterFS going like that. I'm not using all the features ButterFS can do, but it's just, that's really nice to have.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Fedora also use Butter or have the ability to use ButterFS?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Yes. Fedora came out about the same time as OpenSUSE for that. And so I'm taking it you've never compiled the kernel before?
No, not at all. No, I'm very humble when I say I'm a noob. I know how to do some things and I've used a variety of distros for a variety of reasons, but I've never really dug in. And that's one of the things I love about hosting the show is that I get to learn stuff from Door. Learn stuff from you, learn stuff from the people who write in, who send in voicemails, and I'm trying to overall just make myself more knowledgeable on just not the base level of this OS, but how all the nuts and bolts work, because I want to educate myself.
I really haven't compiled the kernel, over 5 years, because all of them now are on deb files or RPM files, so I just download and click on it now. So the only thing you really have to remember is if you compile a kernel or you upgrade a kernel and you're using the Lilo bootloader, most use Grub. Slackware is the big one that still uses Lilo. But if you use a Lilo bootloader, you have to repoint to the new kernel, or the next time you reboot, you will not boot.
So then it doesn't know where to go.
Exactly. You have to get a rescue disk going in and edit your Lilo command to point to the right area. So that's the only thing is if you're using the Lilo bootloader, make sure you repoint it. But if you're using the Lilo bootloader, you're using it for a specific reason, and you already know that.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you know about the tool, you probably know what you're using it for or why you need it.
Yeah, Slackware is the biggest one, I think, that still uses that right now. And I could be wrong, but I thought somebody said that they're starting to get away from it. But I could be totally wrong there. For some reason, I said it's kind of, you got a choice now to use Grub if you want to. An article I read a couple months ago.
Okay. Well, thank you for bringing some more knowledge to myself based on that. Yeah, I think it might have been... Might have been Knucklehead Tech, Josh Williams, that said, you're not really a Linux user until you've compiled a kernel. So I think I might just sit down and do that sometime soon. And if I don't pull out all my hair, then I guess I'll just be better for it.
Yeah, if you ever listen to the Linux Link Tech Show, there's a standing joke. Dan actually compiled a kernel during the middle of a show, and the show just ended abruptly. So
oh, no.
That's kind of a standing okay. joke. If you ever hear about giving a joke about, you compile that kernel, that's what that was. That was years ago. Boy, that was early 2000s, I think, when he did that.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure not to do it during a broadcast then. All right. Next up on the list, something announced today that I thought was just awesome. I don't know how much of a gamer you are, Tracy. Well, I know a little bit about your console experience as of late, but overall, Steam, and I'm sure you've heard this, was recently announced as a beta for Linux, and they announced today that on Steam, if you go and look at some of the games on there, they're actually starting to add system requirements for Linux systems, which is just one more step in saying that they are preparing to open it wide. So hopefully we're going to see a wide open release on it. Have you done any PC gaming in the last few years, Tracy?
I am not a real gamer whatsoever, but I don't know if I can say this or not. I don't think I'm under any disclosure thing that I know about, but I was actually one of the Steam beta people. So I saw a link and I signed up and I got it. I'm not a gamer though. So when I talk about games, like Free Civ is a high tech game for me. I'm not that big of a gamer. You know, I've never have been. It seemed to work flawless. The only thing I really don't like is everything is kind of, and I don't blame them for this one bit. I really, really don't. They kind of had to pick one area, one distribution. So they picked the Ubuntu line. You know, there are workarounds. There is a stuff you can do, but they really don't do much about it. But, and I'm not a huge an Ubuntu person. You know, if I had to, I'd use Mint if I had to, but I'm sure it would be fine on there. But it just so far so good. You know, I just play here and there, stuff like that. I got a couple that I got just to test and everything like that, but probably have a total of about 2 hours total in the whole beta time, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, like that.
Well, still, that's a valuable experience. And I got to tell you, you know, and I've said this before on the past few shows since this was kind of announced, that so many people really hold on to Windows, say, well, I got to have it for my games. And if this is one more thing we can sort of knock out of the way and say, well, you can also do that with Linux, I think it's going to bring a flood of people. Whether that's good or bad, that's a whole other debate. But as far as the focus on just bringing it to Ubuntu first, you have to kind of, from the user's perspective, if you're not an Ubuntu fan, that kind of sucks. But if you look at it from Valve's perspective, if they can get it working on one distro and making it solid, yes, there are workarounds, you know, for people to do other things, you know, sort of off the grid, as it were. But if they get it working with one distro, then that's just going to make it more solid for that one and have it potentially the ability to use it better on other distributions as well.
Yeah, like I said, I don't blame them one bit, because with all the different audio stacks, video stacks, and everything like that, permission issues, folder, where's this folder puts a programs, you know, in wherever, they're all different. Some use tab separated values for their config files. Some use commas. So it's I don't blame them one bit for just picking one. And if it was that big of a deal to me and I didn't like Ubuntu, I would just dual boot, you know, and have Ubuntu on one partition. When I wanted a game, just boot into that, you know. So, but, and if it was that big of a deal to me and I was that big of a gamer, I would just switch, you know, back to Ubuntu, you know. So it's not that big a deal, really.
Yeah. I just wanted to give a quick update. You guys stay tuned. I'm sure more announcements will be made soon. Gabe Newell, the head of Valve, made an announcement on during the Video Game Awards about how they might be doing, that they are going to do a set-top box, probably a home PC that will utilize Steam in the home. So as soon as updates roll out about that, if it's Linux related, I'll definitely throw it your way. Really looking forward to it. Speaking of great machines to be used in the home, the Raspberry Pi. Tracy, do you have a Raspberry Pi?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I actually have two, and I got cases for them from Russ. So
very cool.
Listen to the podcast if you don't know about that. The Techie Geek. I'm not a sales pitch, but hands down, it's the best Raspberry Pi case I've ever touched, held, seen.
Mm-hmm. And if you guys are looking for that case, if you go to eBay and search under, if you go to advanced search and search by seller, it's Cook Tech Inc., as in Cook Technology Incorporated. It's Cook Tech Inc., and it's the only item that they're selling on there. You can't miss it. It's fantastic. I've spoken praises about the case because I could hold one at OLF, and it is my running joke is, Tracy, is that it could take a bullet. So if it could take a bullet, and it can hold the...
Yeah, I actually just, I didn't have my Raspberry Pi in it, but I wanted to see with my Forerunner, I drove over it. And
oh, wow.
Nothing. It didn't dent it, nothing. It gave, there's a little rock on the bottom side, so it kind of scratched a little. But yeah, so it this thing, and it's not heavy. So like I said, it's not, I don't want to get away from that, not really sales pitch, but it's a super solid, great case.
It is. So if you have a Raspberry Pi, check that out. If you do have a Raspberry Pi, if you don't have a Raspberry Pi and you just want to see potentially how they're made, we have a link for you, which we will post in the show notes, that I found over at Tech Republic, which calls Inside the Pi Factory. And it actually shows the interior of the factory in which they manufacture the Raspberry Pi. And it's a very cool kind of walkthrough. There aren't nearly as many employees as I thought they would have. I want to say it's something like, was it 47 or 17? I mean, it's a really small group of people that they use to manufacture these boards. But one of the really, really awesome facts in this article that I read, out of 150,000 boards they've already manufactured, only 6 of them have been returned. And out of those 6, only 2 were due to defect, which is a huge successful percentage of working hardware. I mean, they're very, very small boards. They're very reliable little machines. And we're just, like I said, we're just kind of on the cusp of what we can really do with these systems. What, if I may ask, Tracy, are you doing with your 2 at home or wherever you're utilizing them?
They're just hacking, fun play devices. What I eventually want to do with one is, people know I'm a cable cutter, is...
Oh, yeah.
Find a good distribution to put it on it and stuff like that, that I can do just a lightweight one, just to do some surfing, streaming and stuff like that. But right now it's more of a toy. But one thing I would really like to do is I would like to get a USB NIC that I could get working on there, where BSD will load on it. Well, then I could put PFSense on there. And I would have a 2 NIC, so I could sell these little inexpensive little gateway machines that are super powerful, super lightweight, super configurable, and they have, you know, the whole big PFSense stack on it for their gateway, you know, for the firewall. So that's what I would really like to do. And then if I could have a 3rd NIC, even more bonus, because then I could throw a DMZ on there if they'd want that.
Very cool. Yeah, all the creative ideas that people were bringing and making this happen with this little $35 computer is amazing. And if you want to see how they're made, definitely check out that link in the show notes.
But one idea I would like, this is one of these long-term things I would like to do that probably never have time, but I would love to do, is use the Raspberry Pi and build a MAME big stand-up box, you know, so I could have all those old arcade games and just use a Raspberry Pi to... the power of the whole thing, which would be way sufficient. So I think that would be kind of cool too.
Tracy, there's not enough room in my head for you and all my ideas, so get out of it. That's exactly what I was about to say. Yeah, having that thing run a MAME cabinet. I mean, if you've ever opened up an arcade cabinet before and seen those boards, I mean, they are massive. Even bigger than today's largest motherboards. But it would be cool to have one of those and just like maybe flip up a little coin-op door and just see the little Raspberry Pi like lit up with some LEDs. Like, this is what's running the whole thing. It would be awesome. Yeah, love classic games. Love them. Very cool. All right. So moving on. You guys mention this on your show all the time. This is one of your favorite websites. And I just wanted to throw this out there because I haven't talked about this site and I haven't heard Dor mention it in a while to any of the listeners on this show. But a How To Geek is a great, great website. Not just for any specific like Linux knowledge, but they have all sorts of cool products on there. Everything from complicated stuff down to easy stuff. However, if you want to just peruse the amount of articles they have just for Linux, you can go to howtogeek.com/tag/Linux, and they have them all in alphabetical order. I mean, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of things. And I've gone here and learned how to do things in the command line, how to use certain boot disks for whatever reasons you would need to do that. And they also have it broken down by distribution. You could search for it, obviously, in the Google custom search right on the website, but it's an amazing resource. So even I would mainly suggest this to beginning users. If there's something that you're having trouble with, whether how easy or difficult you may think it is, you'll probably find it through Google, but check How To Geek first, because I check that site every day just because there's so many cool, easily readable and digestible step-by-step instructions to do a variety of things. And Tracy can speak to how valuable it is because they mention it literally, I would think, every show.
Yeah, at least two links every show come from that. My microphone stand's actually an IKEA hack I got off there. They took a $9 desktop lamp that has an arm and springs on it, and took it off, put my mic on. Now I got this spring-loaded microphone that sets anywhere, like you see radio stations swivel back, forth, up, down. Mount my pop filter in front of it. So, I had the mic already, so literally it cost me $9 from that IKEA hack from there. So it's a great website.
Yeah, I can say I bought that same lamp myself. I have yet to actually build the case because I've been lazy as of late, but I am redoing my office. And guys, I'm posting before and after pictures, and I might even do like a video, like Cody Tech Cribs or something, and post that on YouTube and just show you my before and after studio in here, because it's right now it's a complete disaster. I have about a 4-foot space, which I keep relatively clean for what I need to broadcast, and everything else is just a complete mess.
Yeah, with that, I had the same thing. I had it for about a month or two before I did anything, and then I said, well, let me do it. And then literally it took me about a minute and a half to 2 minutes to finish, and I'm like, well, that was kind of a letdown. You know, I was expecting to get into it and hack it a little bit, and I was like, okay, I'm done. So, don't even worry about it.
I get you. So no bending of this corner, no soldering, no zip tie magic. It was just, oh, well, and it's done. Nope,
there. Put the little nut through the other one, took the lamp off, put that on, and okay, I'm done. The only thing is my pop filter, I kept moving around so I could get the best way I place I wanted it. So I did that a few times, but that's beside the point.
Well, that's cool. So yeah, guys, definitely check out How To Geek. Great, great website for all sorts of fun tech articles and step-by-step instructions. Okay, and then Tracy, you brought a couple of topics here, which we'll get into. You want to go ahead and read off the next one?
Sure, yeah. This is a really good one for people. At Windows, they give you a couple different ways to do it, but this is 5 ways to check your disk usage on Windows. These are just 5 different programs, so you can see what's using what folder space. Now, 4 out of the 5 are graphical. One is just raw data. One of the graphical is on the command line, but the rest of them are, you know, just different programs you can install. One of them is KDE-based, and one of them is GNOME-based. But other than that, you know, it's just gives you a good little graphical way of seeing your hard drive space, what's using what folder sizes are using. So I know there's a couple on Windows, so this is just one I found. This article here, and I was like, that's kind of a good information to have, because I used one of them, the command line one. The one I used was, I've been using the whole time, is CDU, stands for color, you know, DU, or I guess for disk usage.
Disk usage, I'm guessing. Probably.
Yeah. Or disk units, but I'm guessing usage. That's one I've always done, but, you know, if you're on GNOME, the Baobab looks really good graphical. And if you're on KDE, FileLight, so it just a good, another good, just how to help you out and everything like that.
And this is 5 ways to check your disk usage on Linux. You said Windows, was that just a mistake?
No, I was saying there's a lot of different ways of doing it on Windows. You know, but Linux, usually people don't know how to do it, or they're not out there prevalent or anything like that. But Windows,
oh, okay.
you know, it's pretty easy to find a couple on Windows just for searching, but these are just strictly Linux. Yes.
But yeah, these, definitely check out this link. It's very cool because through a few of the different tools they provide, I mean, one of them, it almost looks like ASCII text based, and it shows graphs on where your usage is. And then some of them are also very kind of beautiful graphical representations. Think of like a pie chart, but like in the future. Yeah, these are very neat. And yeah, I mean, especially for if you've used a system for a while and you just don't know how to navigate and look at where some of these files are, and you want to start maybe, I don't know, do like a long-term support release and just keep it for a number of years, being able to kind of cull through this and find out where these files are you might not need anymore and get rid of them manually, it would be a big help.
Yeah, I see this junior sysadmins, I could see really liking this when they have a server and they want to peek at every now and then, and they just don't know where to go for this and that. They could pop this open real quick. They can see what's being used where and then get out of it just to check to see if the user, the var file or the libs stacking up higher than normal.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm trying to, well, already kind of spoken this, getting more of the nuts and bolts of some of my systems because I distro hop too much and I don't spend enough time in one particular arena to really delve into it. So I'm trying to commit to using a box for at least 6 months, and having a tool like this just to kind of get in, you know, pull back the curtain a little bit, be very valuable for me. So thank you for bringing that to the show.
Yeah. Now, Masky PDX put in the chat room, he says it looks like the Baobab is installed in Ubuntu by default. So okay. If you don't see it, just go to the command line, type Baobab, and it should start right up if you're on Ubuntu.
Very cool. And yeah, I just installed 12.10, and I will speak about that soon. Well, hopefully my experience is a little more positive, but yeah, I'll install that first thing when we get out of the show.
All right. Okay. The next one I have is, this is just information people can help out. I'm sure most people use LibreOffice if they're on Linux and or on Windows, even if you do use a lot of them, but they're having a test marathon for LibreOffice 4.0. You know, they're on 3.x out right now, but there's a link there. Basically, if you go to LibreOffice.org, click on the test marathon at the top, you can do that too. But December 14th to the 19th, so the 14th would be this Friday. So over the weekend and early next week, they're going to have a test marathon to install it. Get the bugs in so they can do, basically they want as many bugs reported as possible so they can close these bugs before the final release. So the more people use this, the more people that, you know, get it and test it and run it and file these bugs, the better that product will be.
So think of it as like a hyper concentrated, like 5-day to beta process. Is that is that correct?
Yes, that's basically it. Yeah, they're saying, hey, yeah, it's out there now, grab it, do it. But these 5 days, we really want to push it to everybody to saying, hey, look, do this, push it. Let's just put it in everybody's face. And I really like that. And since the Documentation Foundation, the Doc Foundation, I forgot, whoever took LibreOffice over, I really like what they've done. It does not take as long to get some of the stuff pushed through as it did when Sun had it. So nothing wrong with that. You know, I'm glad somebody had it that was fairly open, but some of the stuff would sit out there for a year or two before it was released in. And that's why I'm really happy, because a lot of people don't know what the latest LibreOffice, you can open up Visio, Microsoft Visio documents now. I don't think you can edit them, but you'll be able to open them up, print them, or anything like that. So that's just another nice feature it has right there.
One more step in the right direction, there may be the ability to edit it in the future. And for those of you who haven't, do you use LibreOffice day-to-day quite a bit?
Yes, that's all. I use Google Docs, and I use that there, yes. Now, if you want to, like, a really good, just use the Draw, and you can do flowcharts in the Draw program. But I will get Visio documents from clients that set stuff up, and they're giving me a flow chart or something like that, just in Visio. Well, I always had to load up a virtual machine, load Windows, get the Visio viewer out, and load it and do all that. Well, now it just opens up right natively in LibreOffice. So it just helps me out.
Very cool. And along lines of what you were mentioning too, yeah, when LibreOffice, the first version came out, I think it was like the first 30 to 60 days, they implemented like all these changes that were just sort of waiting when it was still open office. They threw them right in and made them active like within the first month or two. And it greatly improved the, not only the stability, but the ease of use and the overall functionality of it as a piece of software. And to see them already, this is going to be their fourth release inside, what, 18 months? It's been less than 2 years, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I think it just hit the 1 year anniversary recently, but yeah, to see them hit this functionality, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head right there. It's, and another thing I like they're doing that you really don't see too much is the big code base has been out there and they were so big and so bulky. There's a couple people I know that are darn near working on it full time. They're volunteers of what I heard. And all they're doing is they're cleaning that code up, put all that useless code that had, you know, this stack of 15 things pointing in each direction to get one to work. Okay, let's take these 15 sets of lines out, add this one line that corrects everything, and the nonsense lines that were in that aren't used anymore. So they're doing a really big code cleanup. And in the last year, I can notice the speed difference just with a lot of that code cleanup they're doing. It's getting a lot more responsive.
I agree. I mainly use Writer for all the text documents I create now, but I've been using their LibreOffice Calc program, which is their spreadsheet program, because I have a custom spreadsheet for my finances that I made initially in Google Docs, but I've since moved it to LibreOffice Calc. And yeah, even on some of my higher end machines, it took a little bit to load and it would kind of flicker now and then, but now it's just smooth as butter. So, you know, they're making it better day by day, and I can't thank them enough. So yeah, if you guys haven't used it before, or if you are using it and want to help contribute and make it better, the next release better, the 14th through the 15th of December, 2012, download the new release and report those bugs ASAP, and you will be one of the people that helps make it better. Fantastic. All right. Well, I did want to bring on Tracy specifically because he really spoke, as far as I know, he speaks very highly of two main distributions. And one of them is Puppy Linux, which, of course, is super lightweight, can do a variety of things. And man, that icon, the cutest thing ever.
And yeah, I dual boot my laptop, and the two, you'll say I have it on both. But honestly, I'm in Puppy 80% of the time.
Very cool. Very cool. If you guys haven't checked that out, definitely live CD, especially, you can use it for a variety of things. Awesome. Awesome distro that I've thrown on a machine a few times. Very, very lightweight, super speedy. But personally, and what I spoke about earlier in the show is I want to sort of expand my knowledge because I still consider myself a noob. I'm just being humble and very honest with that. I'll help anybody I can, but there's certain things I don't know. And there's certain places I haven't stepped in this large arena that is Linux. One of them, up until recently, was KDE. I hadn't really used KDE in any sort of capacity for any amount of time other than booting into a live CD just to kind of check it out. But even that was many years ago before I really even embraced Linux, and I didn't have a positive experience with it. Probably due to the fact that the guy had introduced me to it was someone I don't really care for. But anyway, I really wanted to get a good KDE experience, and Tracy's other distro that he really, really likes is Mejia. Now, Tracy,
oh,
can
yeah.
you... Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, he's very, very excited. So 7 days ago, six days ago, I installed Mejia on one of my laptops, and I've been using it as much as I possibly can, just as an everyday to day machine. I'm not doing anything super fancy on it, but I wanted to bring on Tracy to give us his overview of Mejia. And there's a variety of options. I'll just go ahead and have him go ahead and give us his introduction here. He gave me some notes, and I'll just sort of chime in as I see fit. Based on my experience that I've had with it for the past week. But Tracy, what can you tell me with your experience with Mejia?
Okay. A couple things is, first and foremost, it's super, super polished. I don't like talking bad about any distribution, but it's you guys, I talked about it earlier, I won't mention by name, but sometimes I believe they push it out before it's ready. And Mejia is released when Mejia is ready. You know, it's usually it's about a 9 month release cycle, mm-hmm. but if it's not ready in 9 months, this is what I really like about Fedora too. And OpenSUSE for the most part, they take their release schedule, and if it needs to be pushed back a week, a month, they will say, okay, whereas Ubuntu and them, it's a hard set date. And if there's something weird going on, they'll push an update later. I really like the polished how it's done. It looks really good. It looks very polished, very professional, just out of the box. Mm-hmm. One thing, it does come on a DVD, so they're not worried about having it fit on a CD or just barely larger. You know, you're going to download what they want to give you. And on the DVD, you don't have to install them all, but just right during the install, you get 5 desktop environments, GNOME, KDE, XFCE, LXDE, and Sugar, you know, and you can pick one of them or you can pick all of them. Most now KDE is probably the one it's most known for, and it's KDE on the latest Magia 2. It's KDE 4.8.2, mm-hmm. and it ships with GNOME 3.4.1, in case you're wondering about those. But KDE is kind of what Magia, which came from Mandriva, is kind of known for. So, and it's a really good KDE release. It's pretty close to the main KDE line, just like the GNOME is real close to the main GNOME release. So you get a really good, if you like, out of the box experience. Now they tweak it here and there a little bit, but it's just out of the box. You know, you can play with different desktops if you want.
And that's one of the things that I was reading about it, is that it is pretty close to the quote unquote, like vanilla KDE feel. Like they don't add like a bunch of layers on top of it and really, really customize it. They've done just enough to sort of brand it their own, yet keeping as true to the original as they can. And for those of you who have never used it before, like Tracy said, it is based on Mandriva, which was based on Mandrake. And one of the things that you hear with Ubuntu too, and several other different distros, is that the pronunciation, well, is it Magia, is it Magia, is it Magia? Well, they have officially announced that there is no official pronunciation, which I really liked about that. It's just kind of a fun little side fact. But it was originally, it's a reference to Mandrake the Magician, the original name of the Mandriva distribution, Mandrake Linux, which I thought was very neat.
Yeah, just for full disclosure, I am on the user community team. Magia. I'm under the United States team. Don't do much, you know, but I will get emails and questions from people every now and then. And it's kind of funny. There's 4 people in the United States on this team. 3 of them are from Texas. So that's a good thing there. No, I'm just kidding. Now some people that hate Texas are going to get some hate mail and everything, but it on one of the earlier meetings, I think they said that because it's not based in one area, but if you had to pick a country of origin where everything is kind of quote or registered or done is France. That's where probably the main country is, and how they pronounced it was completely different than the people from the UK was completely different than what we were saying on the original meetings, you know, which was completely different. There was a couple people from Italy, and Germany on too. And everybody was saying it a little different. You know, I think the official pronunciation in France was Magaya, but I could be totally wrong there, you know, because that's kind of how they were saying it. But yeah, and they were even saying from that it doesn't really matter.
No, as long as you know which distro you're talking about, then you can come together and enjoy in it. Now, when I installed it, upon your suggestion, and I was kind of leaning toward this way anyway, because I didn't have much experience with it, but I installed it with the KDE, I think it was 4.8.2, if I'm not mistaken, is the current release of KDE in Magia 2.
Yep, and I think there's an update, too. You might have gotten an update since then, too, and you might be 4.8.4 if you did an update, but I could be wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, I tried to do all the updates as soon as possible. I mean, it's basically before I got using it because I didn't want to have any sort of negative experience with it off the bat. And that's just a good practice, too. If you install something for the first time, get it updated. That way you're, you know, using all the current stuff. I installed it on, initially tried to install it on my main rig, but I believe it was a a burning error on the optical media I used, and then I threw it on an older HP DV2000 laptop. And when Vista was on this thing, and no, I did not install Vista on this thing. I came with it from the person I bought it with, but I had to boot it up to pull some files off of it. For I could barely keep my left hand on the palm rest because the thing got so hot. And I mean, it got hot. When I run Ubuntu, or even I think I had Linux Mint LXDE edition on here, it still ran warm, but not nearly as hot as Vista. And having a Mandriva, having a Mejia on it, it runs cooler, which I found interesting because, and this may just be straight up ignorance on my part, but I kind of liken it to when you think of like you're going on a vacation to somewhere for the first time and you have that sort of vision in your head of what it's going to look like when you get there. I had this vision of what KDE was going to be like when I started using it. And I thought it was just going to be this big, you know, whiz bang, just all this beautiful stuff just floating around all over the place, almost like a Vista on crack, and just all these widgets and all these beautiful, like, 'cause I heard about the plasmoids and all the things you can do, and I just thought it was going to be all this fluff and all this stuff. And then I booted up for the first time, and to be honest, the desktop, I mean, it was very easy. It was very intuitive for me to use. It looked a lot like a standard GNOME 3 desktop right off the bat. I mean, just my initial impression. It wasn't a bunch of foolishness. I could bring up different they are called plasmoids, is that correct, Tracy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I could bring up, you know, a special clock and have it on the desktop. And then they have their own what is the, like, this, what's their version of the software center called? I forget.
Software manager?
Yeah. Yeah. Overall, it's a very, very easy interface. I was very impressed with it. Like I said, yeah. I ran it most of the week. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's one of the things about KDE. Like, if there's one stumbling block that people get, is a lot of times on some KDEs you do and some you don't. It's going to depend on the version. Is you will not have a desktop, or you put icons on the desktop and you don't see it. You're like, what the heck is going on? Mm-hmm. Well, just one of the standard little add-ons you can get for the plasmoids is a desktop one. So then just put that on the desktop. You can full screen it or just take part of the screen so you can see everything on your desktop. Now, the Mejia version of KDE, when you put something on the desktop, it actually puts it on your desktop. So it's a little, I think, a little easier and intuitive. And another nice thing I like about it is most KDEs, and this is one of my pet peeves, most KDEs are set to single click to open folders. Mejia sets KDE to double click to open folders, which I really like. So that's the first thing I do if I use KDE now, is I go turn the single click off to double click a folder. And so I don't have to do that.
Yeah. Single click sounds weird. I remember I had a buddy of mine, and this is many, many years ago, but had his Mac desktop set to do that. And I was just doing my normal double click, and it just seemed so foreign to me. So yeah, I think, yeah, that would be kind of jarring for a new user if they didn't know that ahead of time.
Yeah, it's, and I'm still amazed at the number of people on Windows that use single click too, when I get them in my shop. But for me, I do so many highlighting and moving files back and forth here and there. It's harder for me to select files when I can't, you know, shift or control A. I single click on one and control A, or single click on one, go down and shift to select a group or something like that. And it opens the file up and I'm like,
so right.
One of the first things I do is I turn it to double click. Yeah.
Otherwise you'd have to just click and drag and then drag, especially if there's a lot of items in that folder, just drag forever because you couldn't just do a single click on one. Yeah, that would be
exactly.
Oh,
and
man.
If you go and if you search for KDE plasmoids, there are literally hundreds upon hundreds of different plasmoids on pretty much everything. I know there's a lot of weather nuts out there. Is they have some really nice weather ones that integrate, you know, live Doppler radars moving on your screen. It's unbelievable. One of the plasmoids, you can even embed a web page, which means you could realistically embed a video website or a video site that's streaming a video and have it your background and just full screen it for your desktop. So it's playing, you know, let's say the game or something like that.
Oh, wow. Well, okay.
Then you could be working on a Word document and make it opaque. So you could really work on your document or something and see the game that's on behind you, you know? So there's, there's unbelievable different kind of plasmoids you can do with this. I was a big GNOME boy. I was a GNOME fanboy. I was the poster child for GNOME fanboy. It was me. Even when I used Mandriva, the first thing I would do is I'd go install GNOME. As soon as 3 came out, it wasn't that I didn't like it. And it's starting to smooth out now. My only thing was, I honestly believe GNOME did not know what direction they were going in. They said they did, but every time they did something, it would almost point a little degrees, 4 degrees off this way. A little bit later, they're 4 degrees back that way. Then they're 2 degrees over. It really wasn't a smooth, straight file the way they were doing, and it drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it, well, I can't remember who it was, but they just said, just try the new version of KDE. And I was like, because I haven't tried KDE, you know, since, you know, early 3-something, you know, version of a long time. And I tried it and I really like it. And that's all I use now. KDE, well, unless I'm in Puppy, you know, but it's, I think a lot of the people that went to XFCE because they didn't like the GNOME or the Unity interface, I really think if they would try KDE and use it for a few days, I think a lot of them would stay. Just apples for apples on the same machine, KDE is faster than GNOME or Unity. I mean, hands down. I did no testing, but you could just feel it and you can see the quickness difference.
And it's funny you mention that because with Mint and Ubuntu being so popular, for people that are just now starting to use Linux or maybe have started in the last 4 or 5 years, chances are they've used GNOME first or they've stuck with it just out of comfort. And that, I totally fell in that category. I have no problem saying that, but just to expand my knowledge and just find out what else is out there, because exactly what you said, sometimes you're sort of beholden to the masters of these projects if you're only using what they're dishing out, which is why I love Linux, because if you don't like what's going on in your current distro, your current desktop environment, your current file system, there are many other options out there. You just need to go educate yourself on how to use them and where to get them. But recently, about 6 months ago, I switched from GNOME to starting utilizing XFCE more. Specifically, distros using XFCE stock. I just recently started installing different desktop environments within Ubuntu, and I love XFCE because it's so lightweight. And honestly, it's all really I need right now because I came from Mac. I used all the whiz bang and the beauty, the aesthetic stuff, and strip it down, you don't need that. But KDE, yeah, it does run great, and it does have its own little touches, especially in Magia, where sort of what I was speaking about earlier with the what I thought the plasmoids were going to be, I thought of like the Windows Vista like widgets, where it's different than that. They have, first of all, they look way better. They're customizable to a certain extent, and there's such a large variety of them where it's not all just like, you know, like weather and stock tips and just a bunch of garbage taking up your screen. But with you saying that live video feed, sort of a wallpaper type of deal, I just bought a new HD projector and I'm going to try out some things, maybe watch some game footage and then, type in podcast notes or something, have it on one of my walls. I think that would be awesome.
What you were talking about is there's two main areas, and this was another feature that I was going to bring up, is when you use a lot of places, you got to find what's going on. But in KDE and Magia does really, really nice. There's two main places to go when you want to do anything. One is the system settings, and that's when you want to do anything to your machine. This would be more, like your desktop, your effects, multi-screen, adding Bluetooth, adding printers, you know, changing display to duals, your fonts, startup and stuff like that. That is the system settings. Now, then you got the control center, which would be kind of like almost like, I don't want to say control panel, but the control panel does all your software, your network, your system, your sharing, your security, your boots and your disks and stuff like that. So everything's in just two spots when you want to look for it. If you open up the control center, you don't see what you want to do, then just jump over to, you know, the system settings and it's there. So it's really easy way to find pretty much everything you want to do. Now, I always look in the control center first because some of them will be in both places. Because the system setting is more of a KDE thing. The control center is more of a Magia thing. So if you do it from the control center, you will be a lot happier because it'll be a little easier, I think, to use because they spend a lot of work in the control center making stuff like this easy to do, easy to set up, and how you use it. They spend a lot of time and energy inside this control center.
How would you compare Magia's control center versus something like Ubuntu's HUD within Unity in the last few releases? Is it kind of the same general principle as having one place to go to find everything or to do anything with your machine, but their own spin on it?
Yes, but I like how Magia set it up. It's and again, I don't really want to talk bad about Ubuntu.
Right.
I would rather have somebody use Ubuntu than Mac or Windows, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But I really believe that, and this is my opinion. And every time I say something like this, I get 100 emails from the, you know, the fanboys out there. But I really believe that Ubuntu pushes stuff out and they get it out so fast, it's there. Then they get it to work and they work on it as they go. And then sometimes they'll tweak so they can go this direction with it and then kind of go back and forth with it. Well, Magia, when they have the control center, it's locked down rock solid. Here it is. It's working 100%. Now we'll push it out. And if there's a big, huge feature coming out with Magia 3 and they were saying, this is what we're doing, Magia 3, we're doing it, and they're not getting it to work and they want to release, they won't put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because and people say, no, Ubuntu doesn't do that. Yeah, their long-term release they had a couple years ago, they put a beta version of Firefox on there.
I remember you that.
Know? So, and you're like, a beta version of your main internet browser?
Yep.
You know, so stuff like that would not happen in Magia. They'd be like, okay, we're going to wait 2 weeks until the regular version comes out. Or, you know, we'll just keep the version before on there. So everything is really, really rock solid when you do it.
And it's funny you mentioned, because that was something else I wanted to bring up that you gave me as part of your notes, which I immediately noticed when I first started using it. But as opposed to some distros that might have one stock browser, Magia has six that it comes with. Yep. Installed right off the bat. You have Firefox, Epiphany, now rebranded as Web, Chromium, Opera, Midori, and Conqueror.
Yep. Like I said, you don't have to install them all, but obviously if you don't install KDE, you're not going to get Conqueror. Mm. I mean, just so you know, that's kind of how that goes there. But it's choice. That's one of the big things they do. Everybody says, oh, choice is good, but Mandriva really gives you that choice. Now, I'll give you a downside of Magia. Everything isn't roses. With the whole Linux world so pushed to Ubuntu, sometimes you cannot find software. And sometimes they'll make software for Ubuntu or Red Hat. Sometimes Ubuntu, Red Hat, and SUSE, you know. I find if I have a choice, I install the SUSE package and I get it because Magia is RPM based. It's not DEB based. Mm-hmm. And no, I have never, even on Magia 1, I'll say this again, I have never had RPM hell. I do have a couple DEB machines at my office and I seem to have package issues more with DEBs now than I do with RPMs. And that's even with my SUSEs and everything like that, because it seems like every now and then I'm running the, you know, apt-get, you know, install space -f, I think is the command to fix all these broken packages that it has. So it's I've never had RPM hell on in Magia at all.
And I even forgot that term until you just re-mentioned it, because Adora has told me that in the past, and I've heard him talk about it on the shows. But yeah, kind of what you were running into with not getting some software, either not available, or because I've yet to see an RPM branded as will work on Magia or for Magia. I always see Fedora, OpenSUSE, that's it. And I tried installing, some of my standbys, like, you know, Chrome and a Kupfer and a few other pieces of software which are flying out of my mind right now because I need to talk about them, of course. But some of them, yeah, I only saw either Fedora or OpenSUSE. I thought Fedora would be fine. It wouldn't install correctly. Drop to a command line, follow the instructions on their site, worked perfectly. So if you guys are delving into using different package management systems or trying out a new distro and you're just not familiar with it, try dropping to a command line. It might sound difficult, but it's just not, because it's literally a copy paste if you don't want to type it out. But you should learn the basics, especially how to do updates and install software. And if you know how to do that in any distro, basically read and follow the directions, you're going to be able to get up and running just fine. Have you had to do
it's a little different, yes, but it you do have to use, you know, different, you know, it's not apt-get or anything like that. But the only time I've really had an issue, I was a couple apps, but the source was available. And it was just literally copying and pasting lines to the command line, not even typing them, and it was installed. And another point on that is that it was on the list I gave you, was I find the community for Magia friendlier than the other communities. Now, I know I'm biased since I am one of the community people, but I see a lot of them going out of their way. I had an issue. Oh, I forgot what it was. It was some piece of hardware that the driver wasn't, you know, it wasn't in any kernel, nowhere, but somebody made a little add-on thing that you could add into the kernel to get it to work. And I forgot what it was for. I think it was a check reader for at my office, if I remember right. Oh,
okay.
And I couldn't get it. I did that. And so, and I went on the, you know, on the forums, I said, hey, has anybody had experience with this here? And one guy came back and said, yeah, I had that about a year ago. And he said, I've tried to do this and that. And I said, yeah, I tried that. It didn't work. He instantly, and here's where I've never seen that, said, hey, do you want me to take your machine over and we'll work on it? Yes. So, opened up, he came over, got to my machine, and we worked on it together for about 45 minutes. And he kind of triggered what he did, like, yep, 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 click here, and got it. So, and that's very common that you see stuff like that, or really detailed, on there, hey, do this and this and this, you know, it, and instead of saying, you know, how do I do this? Like on a lot of the other forums, you'll see, go do a search. It's out there.
You know, right.
they'll say, hey, here's a link to the other thing that was discussed anymore. You know, if you want to help how to search, ask us. And that's about all you really hear. It's nothing derogatory or anything like that. You know, it's really the sense of, you know, hey, we want to be the best, the friendliest distribution that you can have. So instantly sign up for the forums if you haven't. And go out there, because there's some really good, and there's part of the forums is some tips and tricks and hacks and stuff like that. And they got some pretty cool stuff that you can do too, that most of it's just copying and pasting.
And I can speak to that, because when I was looking for the proper pronunciation, it kicked me to a few different forum links, and yeah, it was very well organized. And yeah, reading the comments, you saw a lot of thank yous and your welcomes, which you don't really get a lot anymore, especially in online
exactly,
forums.
Exactly, yeah.
You just don't.
It's right. And I really equate that, not just because it's Magia. Ubuntu is really heavily UK and America. Really, really heavy. SUSE is really heavy US and Germany. Magia is really probably equally all over the world. Literally, if you had to pick one, maybe France, just because that's the core. But it's really equal all over the world about the number of users who's using it. And it's not a big percentage compared to Ubuntu using it. You know, they got the sheer numbers. But I really think it's just because people are more numbers dispersed, although Ubuntu has all the same places, but percentage wise from each place, obviously a lot of them are going to be smaller, that everybody gets along a little better because everybody's from all over. You know, I think that has part to do with it too.
A sort of wider net of experience, more kind of dispersed groups of people than getting together, sharing common and or different experiences, just to make the community stronger. I think that's really what it's all about.
Exactly. And they got a really good wiki. Their wiki, they're constantly working on it, how to do different stuff with the wiki. And I really like the release notes, like Magia 3 is coming out. Alpha 2's out. So, and they give really detail to what it's doing or something like that. And like the others, the IRC group is really nice too. I have the IRC open quite a bit just so I can just talk and BS with some people out there.
That's very cool. Well, I got to say, I had a positive experience with it. I'm going to keep it on this laptop and continue to use it for at least a couple more weeks. This is one I take to work with me, and then I use just kind of in the living room aside from, or the bedroom aside from the studio. So if I have any other further additions to my somewhat review/discussion that Tracy did the majority of the talking. I thank you for being here and talking about it, because overall you brought a lot of knowledge to it, and definitely gave me a really good experience, not only throughout the week by giving me some hints and tips, but what you brought to the show. So I really do appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. Like I said, I'm a cable cutter. I'd much rather be talking, looking, watching geeky stuff and ham radio stuff and homebrewing. Other than that, you know, it's TV kind of sucks.
Yeah, so. No, I hear you. Now, real quick to kind of wrap up the talk about Magia, would you say that, and I've been reading this online because I'm going to want to try another KDE sort of base distro, and the one I'm going to hop to next is Rosa, which from what I understand and what I've been reading at least the past week is that those two seem to be the bigger sort of KDE mainstays, like the big two big camps right now. Magia 3 comes out in the next 2 or 3 months, and then Rosa, their latest release comes out in like 2 or 3 weeks. So I'm going to try that again. Have you happened to dip into Rosa yourself?
No, I haven't used Rosa at all. Is it, what's the based on? Is it, Ubuntu Debian based or?
No, it's based on KDE as well. Or I'm sorry. No, it's also based on Mandriva.
Okay. Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It's based on. Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. No. I haven't used Rose at all. No. Nope. Like, yeah. I said, I am kind of a long-term release person.
Okay.
But with Magia, there's really no long-term release, I want to say, because each release is stable and maintained for a while. So.
Okay.
So yeah. So it's. I will upgrade my Magia boxes more than I do, you know, the couple mints and stuff I have like that.
Got it. Because, yeah, one of the things I go to whenever I want to investigate any sort of distro is, of course, distrowatch.com. I'm sure you've been there before, Tracy. You guys talk about it on your show. And one of the things I like to do is, one of the things nice about DistroWatch is they show the little, you know, the initial desktop, just so you can kind of get a feel for it, at least from a visual perspective. And I got to say, Rosa looked very polished. And to find out it was based on Mandriva and it was also sort of a stock KDE, I'm looking forward to doing that. So I'll give you my thoughts and I'll talk about that on a future episode as well. Because it sounds like between Rosa and Magia, they are sort of two slightly similar but slightly more polished in their own rights forks of Mandriva.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about it. I think it is underutilized and talked about distribution. It's super user friendly. It's really intuitive because out of the box, if you don't know where you see a control center, oh, okay, that looks like I'd go there to do it. And sure enough, there it is, sharing. Oh, I need to share a folder. There's my sharing. Yep, click here. Okay, it's shared. So it's just really, it's just intuitive. That's the best way to describe it. It's really built on how people would use something, you know, the logical framework and timelines and stuff.
Very well put. And yeah, I definitely agree. It was very intuitive. I had a very positive experience with it. Okay, we're going to go ahead and start with the emails now. I have a couple of them, and then I'll have a shout out, and we'll go ahead and wrap up. The first email came from Guillaume. He says, hello, in your last podcast, you talked about Hamachi. It is a good program and is very popular. However, for multi-platform users, I think that NeoRouter is way better. It has a native client and server for a lot of Linux distros. It even has an app for Android. It is really worth taking a look. Regards, Guillaume. And I will say, as a note, Dor did reply to Guillaume saying that he had never heard of it, but is looking forward to giving it a try, especially due to the fact that there's an Android client. I'll make sure to get Dor's thoughts on NeoRouter, and he and I can report back on a future episode. Have you yourself used Hamachi, Tracy?
Yes, I use Hamachi all the time. The native Linux is not great, but I use it on the command line, which is fine. You know, you can install it and use the whole thing on the command line, and you're okay. But for the nice GUI front end on that, there, I think it is, I forgot the name of it, G Hamachi or something like that for the GUI, I think it is. It's another add-on that you can put on top of it. But no, I haven't, the NeoRouter, I haven't. I pulled it up. I would want to read the fine print if you can use this for business environments.
Oh, okay.
That's what I would worry about, because Hamachi, you can and you can't use it for business. You can, and there's certain numbers you can use under business, and it says no, you can't, but you read their fine print, you can. So I know a couple for business, for Hamachi, for some of the businesses, you can get away with having a couple people on it, but I want to read their license for NeoRouter, how their commercial license is for their free one.
Keep it straight, keep it clean, keep it safe, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's not worth paying the big fine.
No, not at all. Well, thank you for that, Tracy, and thank you, Guillaume, for writing in. Our own resident helper, even though that completely understates exactly what he does for us, Martin Obando writes in, and this is in relation to our discussion last episode about upgrading from Linux Mint 13 to Linux Mint 14. Martin writes, I tried upgrading on an older computer and it failed, locked up and became unusable. My thought is that Mint 13 being based on 12.04 and 14 being based on 12.10 had something to do with it. I will be testing the 13-4 upgrade tonight. I'll be using a spare hard drive and let you know what happens. And when he's talking about 12.4, obviously he's talking about Lint being based on Ubuntu. So then he tried upgrading on a different machine and had this to say. Installed Linux Mint 13 on a Dell Inspiration Core 2 Duo with 8 gigs of RAM. Pretty beefy, but not too bad. So following the install, ran sudo apt-get update, sudo apt-get upgrade, and sudo apt-get dist upgrade. Once the updates were done, I ran it again to make sure I didn't miss anything. Kept it running until the OS reported no more updates. I then proceeded to follow the instructions from HowToForge. There's a link which we'll have in the show notes, and Martin will post here in the chat. The update took well over 90 minutes. Wow. Once done, I had changed the sources.list and ran sudo apt-get update, sudo apt-get upgrade, and sudo apt-get dist upgrade. Per the instructions, this all went well, and the updates installed without any issues. Following the reboot, things went downhill. I logged in using the Cinnamon desktop environment, and everything was there and looked good. I noticed that the default Mint 13 icons had changed to the default 14 icons. Good sign. Dropped to a terminal and ran /etc/issue to confirm that I was running Linux Mint 14. Opened up Firefox and got a page can't be found error. Looked at my network settings and I was getting an IP address, correct subnet and DNS. Changed my DNS to Verizon 4.2.2.2 and 4.2.2.3. Just to see if that made any difference. No change. Renewed my IP. No change. Following this, I was not able to spend more time on it, but right off the bat, my network didn't work, even though I was getting a correct and valid IP address. The total time to perform the upgrade was at least as long, if not longer, than it took me to install Mint 13 in the first place. With the network not working, that will frustrate anyone. Jeez, I agree. Mint 13 is built on Ubuntu 12.04, and Mint 14 is built on 12.10. I was able to install Mint 13 on an older machine, but Mint 14 would not install. I performed the same steps to upgrade on an older machine. The same issue happened. I get other errors, but I feel that it's because of the 12.4 to 12.10 transition. So Martin's suggestions, if you're thinking about upgrading, is number one, if you currently have an older machine that is running Mint 13 and will not support Ubuntu 12.10, stay where you are. Don't upgrade. You may have more issues than it's worth. Or number two, if you have a newer machine that is running Mint 13 and it will support Ubuntu 12.10, back up your data and do a fresh install. There was so much that changed between 12.04 and 12.10. I think you'll be better off with a fresh install in the long run. I hope this helped. These are all my suggestions, but feel free to get another hard drive or two, test for yourself. You'll at least have fun doing it. Thanks, Martin. Wow, what an ordeal. Now, yeah. Now, I'm sure you've had experience with doing upgrades in Windows, or at least to have customers that have had. But have you yourself done any upgrades with any of your Linux distributions? And if so, what has been your experience with that, Tracy?
I don't do it too often because I here's how I run my Linux system. Now, I do pay for the 200 gigs of storage on Dropbox. Okay. I pay the $200 a year. I use it for my business and everything. So I do use it. You know, I do pay for it. So I got room to do what I'm telling you about. I do a custom install of Dropbox, and I don't select the Dropbox folder. I create another folder. I just don't name it Dropbox just so it's not so, you know, obvious.
Let me say that. There you go.
And everything, that's everything for me. I got a music folder in that folder. I got, you know, a documents folder. I keep everything in there. Mm-hmm. Well, then every night I have an rsync set up, and it's on a cron job where all my important files that are on my system, you know, all my, you know, basically it'd be like my Chrome folder or all my, dot files that, you know, config files everywhere. I have it copying to a backup folder inside my Dropbox.
Okay.
So as long as I see the Dropbox is synced, I put the disk in. I don't back anything up then, because I know unless I did something that day, you know, like, oh, let me run rsync once, I'll run it, get it there. Okay, it's done syncing. I just blow everything and reload. And first thing I do is I install Dropbox, sign in, and download everything again. So for me, I really don't do upgrades just because of what Martin was saying. You know, I've had a couple of bad experiences. It worked, then it didn't work. And like he said, it's just weird stuff will happen when I do that, you know, and it's not just Ubuntu. It's almost across the board. You'll see different stuff like that happen. I think Ubuntu and Mint are actually one of the cleanest upgrades. You know, I will give them credit for that, you know, but when something happens, it's always something like, okay, the network's not working. Okay, now my Wi-Fi is not working. Okay, the webcam now is not working. You know, okay, my permissions are wrong. So that's why I just gave up on that. And I just do my little, you know, backup thing, you know, and I'm good to go, you know. So even if you create little backup scripts to do the same thing with rsync, and if you don't want to use the command line with rsync, I think it's grsync is a GUI front end.
Yeah, that's
in the repositories. So you could even just click point, and if you want to learn how to use rsync, install grsync, do it through the GUI because it shows you what the command will be.
Oh, really?
You know, okay. So then you can copy that line and just, and if you want to put it in your cron, you know, just even if you don't want to run it through grsync, you can create it through there, copy the actual command, paste it, you know, yep, it works. Now let me take that for my my cron jobs, and I got it right there. So it's really lightweight. You already got cron going, so why not add stuff to your cron jobs?
Yeah, that's another thing I have yet to utilize, but speaking along those terms, I kind of do what you do in another fashion where, I can't live without files, like my photos, stuff that I want to keep long term. I have those physically backed up on the drives as well. But just as far as my day to day, like what I would need if in case I blew away my distro or if I just started with like a fresh machine, I do keep on Dropbox or Ubuntu One or a couple other different cloud services. And that's all I really keep on there anymore. So I but I've never upgraded because I've only heard horror stories. And one of the things we talked about last week, Dora was basically suggesting, well, you know, if someone's going to try to upgrade from 13 to 14, go ahead. Martin did on two different machines and had horrendous results.
I hate to laugh, Martin. He's in the chat room now. I apologize for laughing, Martin. I apologize right now, but I've been right where you're at. So, and one thing I do appreciate you writing up what you did and the issues you had.
Oh no, me too, Martin. And he took a hit for the team, educated himself, I'm sure, to a certain extent, helped me, helped you, helped the listeners. So thank you for that, Martin. If you guys are thinking about doing an upgrade, man, make sure you got that stuff backed up, because you do not want to lose anything absolutely crucial, or just something that's going to get you up and running ASAP.
Exactly. And if you don't have a lot of space in Dropbox, get an external hard drive or a NAS drive and do that rsync cron job thing and all your backups to that file. So that way it's synced locally into there every night. So anytime you got a whimsical thing, you want to try new distribution. Okay. You know, let me put it in, blow it away, install it, you know, 2 hours later. And I've done this a couple hours after using it, like, oh no, this distro sucks.
Right. Yeah. You know,
So then I just, let me go back to what I had and I'll get my stuff back in and I'm done, you know, so then I don't have to worry about that. So yeah, because sometimes you do a distro and it really not overall sucks. It sucks to you because you don't like how it is, what it's doing, why it's doing it and stuff like that. So yeah.
What I suggest for you, if you're trying a new distro, anyone, it's going to be a fresh environment. It's going to be same ball game, you know, different field. That's all it is. So you're going to hit snags. You're going to hit hurdles. But if you're hitting a bunch of them and you're just overall feeling comfortable, then try something else. But if you can't get one piece of a software to install, just don't be like, oh, forget it, and go back to whatever you're using before. You're not doing yourself any good. You're not learning. You're not making yourself better. So definitely keep at it to a certain extent. Yeah.
Exactly. I really, newer people to Linux, I really, really tell them, okay, you're probably going to start on Ubuntu or Mint just on the odds.
Oh, yeah.
Is what people say. And I say, keep it there. Keep it there. A great thing about Linux, it is super, super easy to dual boot. So just leave some space on the hard drive. Well, keep working in Ubuntu. Well, every week, try a new distro for a second one. And because I really think a person, now this is going to sound weird, really needs to try 8, 10 plus distributions to make sure they know what they like. It is so dispersed. It's so out there. There's so many choices. Like a lot of people that use Red Hat and CentOS, a lot of them are migrating to Scientific Linux.
Oh,
you know, I think it's Scientific Linux or Science Linux or something
Scientific.
It, and because just a lot of the stuff that comes pre-installed and how it's configured, it's like, oh, great. You know, little kind of stuff like that on a netbook, you know, tried 100 different netbook remixes. By far, my favorite one for netbooks is Crunchbang. You know, Crunchbang is awesome. You know, is it as user-friendly? No, but it's super fast and I can literally do anything I want. It's 100% power, you know, that I can do. So keep trying distributions, you know, just make sure you back your stuff up if you don't want to do a boot, or either that or install VirtualBox. Just install a bunch of distros in VirtualBox, keep, and then you see one you like, well, then switch to that one. You know, so that's a good way. Try a whole bunch of distributions, because don't just stick with something because other people are doing it. Go to one you like. That's why I use Magia. Do I expect people to install Magia after this? Yes. Do I expect people to say, man, that distro sucked? Yes, I'm expecting that. You know, it's like, how can you use that? Because everybody has different tastes, you know. So just
definitely,
I'll get off my soapbox here and just keep trying distributions.
And I think I've told you this, but for those of you who haven't heard of me talk about this in the past, I've had some dual boot experiences before. I won't really go into those, but if you can try a variety of distros, either through a virtual environment or a live environment via a live CD or a live USB bootable drive, definitely try that. Just get out there and find out what's out there. Or you can do what I do. If you have another hard drive lying around, perhaps from like a dead laptop, if you just, you know, if you're doing work for a customer, if you like a big sale on Newegg or podnest.com/Amazon or whatever, get like a $30 80, 120 gig laptop drive. And what I do is I have several drives in my tower. I have one devoted specifically to distro testing, to where I just literally unplug the SATA power and then data cables from whatever machine I'm using, from whatever drive I'm using, into my test drive, install a new distro right there. And that's going to give you the honest to goodness best potential operating environment, because you're using your actual hardware. You're not using it in a virtual environment. You're not based to, you're not limited by the write speed or read speed, excuse me, from the optical media. So give that a try too, if you can afford it, if it's an option for you. If it's not, work toward it. It seems to work really good for me.
And nothing you can do is, I saw last weekend, I was walking through Walmart. They had a laptop there, a Windows 7 laptop, 15-inch screen, 3 gigs of memory. Not great, you know, like that. You can upgrade that. I think it was a 320 gig hard drive. It was an i3 processor. Nothing fancy, nothing, little webcam on it. $310.
Yeah.
It's like, really, $300? It's like, oh man. I have a lot, you know, you could have a laptop. Well, pick that up for a backup laptop.
There you go.
If your main machine goes down, that's your backup. Well, your backup one, you can do all your testing on. And if your main one goes down, okay, now let's get that one working until my main one's up, you know, because $300 is a lot of money, but it, in the whole scheme of things, especially if you're using it for part of a business, it's not very much, you know, for a good solid backup just there. Or if you can justify, quote, quote, play, you know, machine or something like that, or you're looking for a Christmas gift, well, then tell them, you know, hey, let me get a cheap laptop like that when one goes on sale, so I can just test stuff like this, or take an image of it and install it, everything you have on that machine exactly the same, to say, well, now let me try to get this to work before I ruin my main machine.
There, so you go.
It's a total, it's a total test environment. Yeah. But like you said, the more inexpensive way to go around it would be just get a couple extra hard drives, because you know, Newegg, Tiger Direct, or Amazon, you can get those, you know, less than $40 for some smaller size SATA drives now.
Definitely. So yeah, if you're looking to do that, give that a try. Tracy, we're nearing the end here. Do you want to tell us where we can find you online?
Sure. Tracy Holtz, H-O-L-Z. You can Google Plus, Facebook, or anything like that. You can search me for that. If you want to email me, there's a couple different places. You can go tracy@thetechiegeek.com. You can go tracy@htredneck.com. My work website is htredneck.com for High Tech Redneck. Yep, that is the name of my business. Anywhere on there, get a hold of me. And I don't just do this because I want to get out there. I really enjoy talking to people. That's why I really got into the ham radio, you know. So anytime you want to BS with me, hit me up on a chat, hit me up on a call or anything like that. I do live in the country, so my I won't turn the video on a lot. Just because of that, if I start turning the video on, this whole thing would, something like that, you would have been here. And so, that's why I turn the video off. Every now and then I'll do some tests and I'll see my, it's going good. So then I'll, turn the camera on there, or if I'm at the office.
Very cool. And yeah, you, now let's see, you're on the Techie Geek, obviously. You also have a ham radio podcast, started/in the works. Can you speak a bit about that?
Yep. Me and a buddy of mine, Joel McLaughlin, we're starting it, and he is from the Columbus, Ohio area. And it's the name of it is Wolf Hung. And everybody's like, what the heck is that? I will say it's coming out here. Just keep an eye on the Techie Geek, or keep an eye on my, line in Google Plus or Facebook, and I'll post it. But basically we'll explain what Wolf Hung is in the podcast in episode one. It's kind of an old term for ham radio. Ham radio is one of the things you start getting into, and you really start getting into it more. It's an addictive hobby. It's a fun hobby. It goes so close with tech stuff. If you even remotely like talking online and stuff like that, you will fall heavy into the ham world. It's pretty inexpensive to get into. I had my ham license for 2 years before I had a ham radio. I'm like, huh? Because there's a software that's cross-platform called Echolink. You can install it on your computer, and you can talk all over with that. Now, you do need a license. You have to pass your test, but that test is pretty easy, the first level test.
And to give you an update on the listeners, I'm starting to get into ham a little bit. Basically, I'm based on Tracy's, I'd say solely based on Tracy's infectious adoration for the platform. And I hope to have my first radio for as a Christmas present. So I'll keep you guys updated on that. And my weekly. Go ahead.
Yeah, cool. Here's a really good thing about a ham radio. If you there's three levels. The first level is basically basic local stuff. Mm-hmm. As soon as you take the first one, and usually it's $0 to $15 to take the test. That's it. And if you pass the first one, you get to take the second one free. Take the second one. The first two tests are so close, you probably have about an 80% chance of getting a lot of the same questions for passing the second level test immediately.
Oh, okay.
So always ask if you pass the first one, just say, hey, I'd like to take the second one because it's no more charge. Then they'll hand it to you and you pass, you got your second. Now when you got your second level, you got a little more frequencies. But here's where that comes in handy. You can use those. Anytime there's a natural disasters, there's natural emergencies, ham radio is the first place they go to get the information from. Everybody, the government, everybody. Like Katrina, ham radio people are doing it. The one that was up in New York a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. I was on listening to that and stuff I was hearing, what people were broadcasting on ham radio, I was hearing 3 to 5 hours later on the news.
Wow.
You know, that's supposed to be, you know, breaking news updates. Oh, I learned about that this morning.
Right.
You know, so it's just kind of cool for that kind of stuff too, the information and the friends you make.
Very cool. And my shout out of the week will set you up for another show that you're involved with. I want to shout out to Byer Brown, Spork Saber, and Red Dwarf based on their wonderful, wonderful work on pod brewers. I recently heard episode, I want to say 35, which was syndicated through Hacker Public Radio, and the love of just beer, but also the friendship of the camaraderie between those three guys in that episode just made me, and I was listening to it when I was working, it just made me feel like I was right there sitting there with them. Especially listening, oh my God, I listened to them pour a beer and I just immediately started salivating. But you're involved with the podbrewers.net and you help broadcast that through a project of yours. Can you speak about that really quickly?
Yeah, it kind of slowed down for me just because of time.
Yeah.
Me and Dor did it on Monday nights, but we kind of had to step back a little bit from that because some other commitments we want to do. Spork and Byer do an awesome job with that show.
They do.
It's all about home brewing. Beer, cooking with beer. You don't even have to make beer, but it's they really try to take to the beginner approach all the way to a little more expert stuff. And remember, it is a live show that they record for podcasts later. So every now and then we'll get an email saying, man, you guys editing sucks. We don't edit it. We start at the beginning, we close it to the end. Any super big mistakes in the middle, you know, we'll cut out, you know, but 99% of the shows is cut the beginning, cut at the end, release. Hmm. So, you know, it's a live show that we do record. So there's a little difference. It's not a true podcast. It is a live show on Friday nights that we put out for podcasts later. Cause a lot of interaction from the chat rooms, Red's getting more and more involved in that, which I love to see. The more you talk to Red, the more you want to talk to Red. He's just one of those guys.
Definitely an infectious personality, really knows his stuff and loves his technology. Big, big, big shout out to Bill Wilson, aka Red Dwarf. Well, thank you once again, Tracy, very, very much for being on the show. You did a great job, educated us a lot, especially myself, on quite a few topics, and I'd love to have you on again in the future if we need someone to fill in.
Anytime you want, just let me know.
Fantastic. So wrapping up, guys, as always, please, heading into the holiday season, or even if you have a bunch of after the first of the year purchase, or anytime during the year, if you're buying anything tech related, and if you're thinking about going to Amazon, please use podnuts.com/Amazon. Use that URL or make a clickable link in your web browser. It'll set you right up with Amazon, therefore also giving a Podnuts a small commission, which will be put to great use. Really do appreciate that. If you guys have a Raspberry Pi and you're looking for a great Raspberry Pi case, please go to eBay and search for the user Cook Tech Inc., that as in Cook Technology Incorporated. They sell fantastic Raspberry Pi steel Raspberry Pi cases made in the USA, which is endorsed and helped consulted by our good friend Russ Winter, Tracy's co-host on Techie Geek. Please visit the ACF.co, the Accessible Computing Foundation. You can be helping bring accessible software to people who need it. For you can contribute as little as $2 a month to help the ACF and our good friend Captain Jonathan Tinedo. Saluting to you, sir. Finally, for emails, please send them into podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. And the voicemails, you can call 7076-PODNUT. We have a couple of voicemails. Thank you for sending those in, guys. However, I don't have a hardware set up to send to play them on the show this week. Dora will be back next week, hopefully, and we'll get those in next week's show. If you want to contact me, Cody Cooper, on Google Plus, or I now have my own official PodNuts email address, which was a Christmas gift I got early. It's cody@podnuts.com. Hit me up with anything you want. As always, thank you very much for listening to the show or watching live. And remember, Linux is not just for all of us. Excuse me. Oh, man. Linux is not just for the rest of us. It's for all of us. Good night.